Hello, my name's John Schaefer and welcome to The Wealth Show from CityWire. I spoke with RWC's John Molloy about the opportunities he's seeing in emerging markets. This is despite the contagion created by the Evergrande debt crisis and more onerous regulation on Chinese tech companies. The manager of RWC's Global Emerging Markets Fund is particularly bullish on raw material stocks due to their role in the transition to green energy. As an emerging markets manager, do you feel that emerging markets are too exposed to China, and how has the Evergrande crisis impacted you as an investor?
China clearly drives the growth that we see throughout the emerging market world, but it's not all of the emerging markets, as you probably know. I mean, if you look at Latin America with, you know, half a billion people and a very, very large economy, if you look at, you know, parts of Eastern Europe, Africa, and then obviously other parts of Asia, India, which end up being drivers. But, you know, it does at times have an impact on emerging markets overall. And I think you've seen that this year, where this wave of regulation that we've seen through the Chinese economy has impacted flows to emerging markets. Surprisingly, though, the growth in China has been pretty resilient. So it's the equity markets have been under pressure. But if you look at, you know, the real economic growth, it's been pretty strong. In terms of Evergrande, Evergrande's been a problem for quite some time, and it's been recognized by the markets for quite some time. If you've been following China closely, in fact, you know, we did a lot of work on the capital structure early on this year. It really has not had an impact on our portfolio. We have no exposure to the real estate market. I would say maybe one company that we have in the portfolio, an insurance company, has come under pressure, but they have no exposure to Evergrande. And I think actually Evergrande and what's going on in the real estate market probably will push the PBOC, Chinese regulators, to ease monetary policy, given that we are starting to see a slowdown in the real estate market.
And how would an easing of monetary policy affect your portfolio?
Well, I think overall, if you look at China through COVID, they've been pretty responsible in terms of their monetary policy, which has been tight, and also their fiscal policy, especially compared to the U.S., the U.K., and Europe. And so we feel that, you know, if they were to reduce rates, have additional triple R cuts, putting more liquidity, that should be good for overall economic growth. And I think you'd see that, you know, be reflected in certain parts of the equity market. The Chinese A-shares, actually, that market's been pretty resilient. Where you've had quite a bit of pain has been in the ADR market, the Chinese ADR market, as well as the Hong Kong-listed China stocks.
You mentioned there that Evergrande has been something that had been talked about for several months, if not several years. Did you kind of, as a fund manager, realize the extent of it? Could you see this sort of storm brewing?
We did early on this year, and we took a look at, as I mentioned, the capital structure. And at that point, the bonds were trading in the high 80s, which was a high yield for a real estate developer. And then subsequently, they've collapsed into the 20s. And, you know, at that time, we wanted to fully understand what the extent of the you know, restructuring would be. And although it's a large balance sheet, you know, with about $100 billion of bonds and then another couple hundred billion of additional leverage tied to the company, we didn't think it would create a systematic collapse as some people have been talking about, similar to, let's say, Lehman or Bear Stearns. And the reason is because it's just it didn't have the size and the impact that a Lehman or Bear Stearns, or even at that time, Merrill Lynch, which also had a major problem, had. I mean, we were talking about $1 trillion balance sheets back then. And so when we looked at the rest of the real estate market, looking at Vanke or other large real estate developers, their bonds were trading at spreads that were very, very reasonable, interest rates of 3-4%. And so we didn't see that kind of contagion effect that we saw during the global financial crisis. And if you look at China, China is it's a unique system, because basically you have the Communist Party or the government on many sides of business. And so they control the banks. They have quite a bit of influence, obviously, in some of the large corporates. In some cases, you know, they actually control those real estate companies. And so I think our view was really that you could have a controlled unwind or restructuring of this business that wouldn't have broad implications, on the economy or the stock market for an extended period of time.
Something that is very pertinent to your portfolio is regulation. And obviously, the Chinese government's been tightening regulation on the tech sector. Has that changed your approach at all, or perhaps your future approach?
It's a good question, John, and it's something that obviously has impacted the market and valuations this year. Waves of regulation and regulation overall is nothing new to China, and they've gone through periods of regulation. If you go back to 2018, if you look at the gaming sector, there have been periods of regulation in education years ago. You obviously had the clampdown of the shadow lending years ago. You probably recall that being a big focus. And now, that doesn't exist. And so typically these periods of regulation are at a time when the economy is in pretty good shape, which it has been coming into this year. We had identified that kind of shift early on, I would say, probably much sooner than some of our competitors. And really that was around the time when Ant Financial, the Alibaba financial giant, was supposed to come to the market. And that deal was canceled on the day of the issuance, which is unprecedented. Now, we completely reduced our exposure to Alibaba, which is obviously it's still a big name in the market, but it was probably a top three name in the index. And at that point, then we completely reassessed, where we had exposure. We did, reducing our exposure in education. So we avoided that. We avoided the other, areas in technologies such as Meituan, PDD, JD, as well as Alibaba. And even Tencent, which is a name in the portfolio right now, we had a relatively small position in that company. In fact, early on this year, we had an underweight to China, which was probably about 9 to 9.5%. We can speak about it where we are now, but we have closed that underweight.
Well, you mentioned stocks like Meituan and Tencent, and they're still pretty weighty positions in your portfolio. Do you think they'll be reduced further as we go on?
We actually have been bringing those positions up, John, in the past couple of months after actually having reduced them earlier in the year. And we think the market going forward will be focused on fewer tech companies in China, and we'll see much more differentiation and dispersion of returns. Last year, all of the China technology stocks did well. You could have basically thrown darts. And I think looking forward, where we do really well is, our active management. So pure stock picking and looking at the thematic research that we do. And so we've identified Tencent as one of the core winners longer term, as well as Meituan and as well as Bilibili. So we think, you could see just more dispersion returns and those stocks they have very, very strong growth outlook as we look out, over the next 3 to 5 years.
Let's look outside of China. Where are you seeing the best opportunities in your portfolio? Stock-wise, if you could give a couple of examples, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think there are a few different drivers of emerging markets going forward. And one of them is the investment in climate change. And I think it's very probably misunderstood by the market. I think it's underestimated. And the wave of money that we're going to see going into renewables, green technology is going to be enormous. And I think it is similar to what we saw in the early 2000s where China came onto the global markets. And every company that you're talking to, even it's not just governments, but it's consumers, it's corporates, is focused on climate change. And that's going to result in materials doing much, much better going forward. We have to, as we switch from, basically carbon and to oil and gas and coal, we need more resources in terms of copper, lithium, cobalt, and even it will impact things like aluminum and steel. So one of our bigger themes in the portfolio is copper. And one company that we are, we like is First Quantum. It has operations in Panama and Zambia. So it's a frontier market company, in terms of how we categorize it. We also like a company called Sokimich, which is a Chilean company, SQM, Química y Minera. And that company is the largest lithium producer in the world. And so, you know, as the world starts to build out solar, electric vehicles, more renewables, both copper and lithium are set to do extremely well.
Is China still the biggest region in your portfolio? And could you see perhaps India overtaking it eventually?
China is at this point. And as I mentioned, we were underweight China earlier this year. We've closed that gap. So we're probably close to the index at just about 35%. But it's a good point on India. And India has been coming up and has been an overweight position in our portfolio this year, which has worked well. As you probably know, India has outperformed China pretty materially. I definitely could see a scenario where India is a bigger part of our exposure and a bigger part of the index going forward. And I think it, in terms of China, although China is a big part of the portfolio and index right now, that has not always been the case. And if you look at markets like Brazil, Russia, even Saudi Arabia, for example, the representation in the index is anywhere from 2 to 5% for those countries. And those countries' weighting could be much, much larger going forward. But we do think that India could be quite large going forward. And one of our larger positions, Reliance Industries, is doing a lot of work, and we're working with them on ESG in terms of their clean energy. Their carbon neutral targets are very, very aggressive. And we're on the committee with the UNPRI. We're actually co-chairs on that committee, working with the company for them in disclosing what they're investing in. And we think that should help that stock performance going forward in terms of Reliance.
I think something coming up from COP26 is sort of a push for more funding for emerging markets to help with clean energy. Do you think that will help much on the ESG front from an investor's point of view?
I think so. I mean, you know, ESG has been part of our process since we started the strategy almost 10 years ago. And so, you know, we believe that ESG is part of the due diligence that goes into analyzing stocks and companies. But the difference, I would say, from, you know, today compared to 10 years ago or 30 years ago, is that more and more companies, emerging market companies, frontier market companies, are embracing the ESG changes. And so they're looking at things like board diversity. They're looking at, you know, carbon footprint. They're looking at disclosure. And we do engage with our managements. We have very good relationships with our managements. And oftentimes it's a two-way conversation in terms of their disclosure. And they're trying to learn about the Sustainalytics or, you know, what ISS is focused on or what the market is focused on. So I think, as well as you know, the investment in renewables and green and clean technology, it's also other parts of ESG governance that is clearly a focus. And, you know, I think it's improving in emerging markets, in some cases slowly, but it is improving. And then also the social issues in terms of like child labor or you know, the regulation throughout you know, the workforces.
You mentioned disclosure there. How do you meet that challenge? Obviously, you're a Western asset manager and you're investing in several different emerging markets simultaneously without necessarily being on the ground there. How do you deal with the transparency factor?
It's a great question. And it's, I think a lot of it comes down to experience. We have a 22-person team with over 15 years on average of experience in the market. So, you know, meeting these companies, visiting the companies during, you know, normal times. And even this past year, we had one of our analysts in China, Huan Long Chen. He was in China for 2 months, meeting with companies, visiting, attending conferences. And so, you know, it's really that due diligence of looking at the stated financials, but then also comparing them to industry standards, speaking to their competitors, and then looking, you know, basically meeting with the management and seeing that credibility over a number of years. And I think that really helps. We are looking at well-established companies. You know, the minimum market cap for our strategy is $2 billion. So these are large companies. They typically have many different, you know, banking relationships. They've typically been, publicly traded for a long time. And as I mentioned, in most cases, we've been meeting with management for many, many years. And that really helps in terms of the credibility.
So the largest position in your portfolio is Taiwan Semiconductor. Obviously, its share price has lost some of its momentum compared to some of the other chip manufacturers in recent months. Are you still bullish on the stock?
We are still positive on the stock. It has been in the portfolio probably since we started the strategy. We do believe that TSMC, Taiwan Semi, is a clear leader in the semiconductor space and will continue to put up very, very strong growth going forward. The stock has come under pressure, and I think it's really a result of the overall equity market flows into emerging markets, which have been pretty tepid to negative, given the volatility around China. And I think that's really been the main reason. We do like the stock at this point. It has been reduced slightly to fund some of our increase in our China names, such as Tencent or Meituan. But we still have a core position, and it's a top three position at this point. There's also another company, MediaTek, which is a semiconductor company in Taiwan as well. And we think that that's a phenomenal play on the investment around 5G. And 5G continues to be one of our stronger themes. So not only TSMC, but also MediaTek is very interesting.
What would your three most bullish plays for the next 12 months be?
First Quantum is very interesting in terms of the copper. And as we speak today, copper is almost back to a 52-week high. At a time when we're still talking about Evergrande and we're still talking about worried about China, and the growth coming through COVID is uneven. So I think the investment in renewable and more focus on that by investors will drive copper-related stocks. And First Quantum, I think, is a beneficiary there. Believe it or not, also Tencent, which is a name that is well known and probably less well held just because it's come under pressure, but I think Tencent is in a position to do extremely well in terms of the stock performance going forward. We think that they're in a very, very different position than a company like Alibaba. We think gaming and the regulation around gaming is here to stay, and if anything, it's going to accelerate as we look at augmented reality, virtual reality, and all the changes to gaming, and especially mobile gaming, not to mention what's happening in payments and cloud technology. And I think then the third name would be Reliance, which we hit on earlier. And Reliance, as I mentioned, is doing quite a bit of investment in renewable, in attaining those carbon neutral targets that they have. And their telecom business, Reliance is a conglomerate with energy assets, but also a much bigger part of the business is mobile telecom business. And as you have 4G and 5G roll out in terms of telecom, their subgrowth has been very strong. They also are a leader in bricks and mortar commerce as well as e-commerce. And so both of those businesses are doing very well. So I think that's where we're very excited looking out over the next 6 to 12 months.
Great. Well, John, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, John. Thanks for having me.